Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we're having a little problem with our intro music, Mommy. Oh, sorry. Good Lord, it's playing on. And so,
It's not playing.
No, it's just winding and winding.
Oh, dear.
I'm terribly sorry, but you know what? We could always...
Well, there we go. Well, darlings, clearly Shirley Booth and the producers of Hazel have finally gotten their revenge, our technical gaffe at the beginning of the show tonight. This is Sybil Brunchen. Bonjour, mes amis. Comment ça va? Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing, darlings. I'm coming to you live, and believe it or not, I'm coming to you live from the revolving ballroom of the high atop the Chrysler Building, the Cafe Berlin, high atop the Chrysler Building in the tower. And I'm actually in the studio tonight with my wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, and we're scolding the tech crew right now for playing, not getting the music going and not doing all of that. But again, I think it's because we're right before Halloween, and Shirley Booth is probably haunting the hallways right now and punishing us for procuring or scamming away or reaving her lovely, wonderful opening overture from the Hazel series. By the way, darlings, Mummy has asked many of you out there with a music background, please, would you like to submit a new opening jingle for the Sybil Brunchen Show, Come Now, Don't Sulk? We would love to hear your submissions. We would love to have a new jingle, although I do love Hazel, but we'd love to have that. That would be a great thing to change our direction on the show, is to have a new jingle. I want to just address things. Hello, Gwendolyn, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. My tin can is up. I'm ready to go.
Great. I want to address a few things. Gwendolyn Holden-Berry is my producer and is the executrix of DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. DaughtersOfIsis.com, that is our sponsor. Do go to their page on the internet and check out their wonderful products. We're going to talk about that in just a second. We're coming to you live tonight. I am back in New York. For those of you that have been wondering week after week after week, where is Mummy? It's like that. Where is, what was the old, the little lovely Hispanic girl, Latina girl, where in the world is Dora or where? I can't remember. Dora the Explorer or something like that. Yes, and we would have to figure out where she was. Well, for those of you that didn't know, Mummy was in five states. This past week, I literally, in this last trip, I went from Omaha, Nebraska. I went from I actually was in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Colorado, and Iowa. Yes, and that was that. So I was in Omaha, and I saw the old market district of Omaha. Thank you, Nebraskans and Omahans, or Omahomos, or whatever you are, whatever a person from Omaha would be called, an Omahomo, I assume. Anyway, the bottom line is, I'm sorry I didn't get to see all of the old market. It was blocks and blocks and blocks. I could have spent days there. You know how meticulous I am about walking and exploring. I could have spent forever there, and I wasn't able to because we just didn't have enough time. I was also in Colorado, and although Larimer Square is adorable, it is, let's call a spade, one block long. I am not ungrateful to Dana Hudkins Crawford, the famous millionaires who believes in preserving urban archaeology and urban heritage. What a wonderful millionaires she is, or perhaps a billionaires. She's no Alexis Carrington, that's for sure. She's not buying jewelry. She's buying real estate and trying to make sure that we preserve it and take good care of it. And she made a brilliant stroke of urban salvation with the Larimer Square project in Denver. And I only hope that she could have done more, or wish that she could have done more. By the way, Denver as a city is drop dead gorgeous. I was watching some YouTube reruns of Dynasty, and I was chuckling out loud. 90% of Denver, as it looks today, has been built in the last 20 years. Denver, I was in the Cherry Creek area. I went to the beautiful country club historic district. Oh, my God. So the Colbys and the Carringtons, or wherever they were living, their homes were not nearly as impressive as what I saw this past weekend in Denver. And Denver's skyscrapers, brilliant. The Civic Center Park, oh, my God, just in time for the beautiful Denver Marathon was yesterday, and the weather couldn't have been more gorgeous, much warmer than here in New York City, and it was beautiful, and the park itself is breathtaking, and the Denver Museum, oh my God, just spectacular what they're doing, adding on to it, and the new, it's Daniel Libeskind's incredible architecture, the plaza they're building around it, beautiful. It just, the whole city was a treat to go walking through. The Performance Center, I think that was financed a lot by Molly Brown. It was built in 1907, so that was 5 years before the Titanic, and she was already a multimillionaire. I can't believe that she wasn't part of that. She and her friends building the Performing Arts Center there, which is spectacular as well. And then their Convention Center, which is their version of the Jacob Javits Center. They're all lined right up there on the Golden Triangle. I was just so stunned and so thrilled to be there. Anyway, back to what we're going to talk about. Let's talk for a minute with Gwendolyn, because I think we all need an attitude adjustment. I think we all need a emotion and psychological and physiological and metaphysical change in our lives and our attitudes and our destinies. And Gwendolyn, I was looking through my wonderful apothecary here of bottles of essential oils and mists that you've sent me. And before I started the show tonight, I sprayed on what I believe is Kaifi, which is spelled K. Let me just get it here because I love the spelling on it. It's very exotic. K-H-Y-P-H-I. K-H-Y-P-H-I. What? And it says it has 32 ingredients in it. What is it? And how does it work? Can you tell us?
Well, certainly, I'm happy to. Kaifi, which is my pronunciation because it's my blend of the most ancient incense recipe known to mankind, usually called Kaifi, comes from ancient civilizations of Egypt, long before even the first dynasty. And it was made in pots, where they use wine and sandalwood and all kinds of resins from basilica to frankincense. And they put in raisins and they'd age those pots for a long period of time, a few years. And then after it all fermented together, they would uncork them and dry them out and powder them down and use them as temple incense to the great gods and goddesses of Egypt. Kaifi, my blend, has 32 different ingredients. And here's a little woo-woo for you, Mummy. I got that recipe. It was, I don't know how else to put it, but channeled. All of a sudden, I was laying in my bed doing a little research. And I just heard all of these different oils, including adding grains of paradise. And I wrote it all down and went into the shop the next day and blended it. And then I put it away on the shelf I forgot about it for about 6 months. And then my good friend Murphy came in and she said, "What is this? This dark amber bottle." She opened it up and she said, "Oh my God." So we had Kaifi by Daughters of Isis. And Basically, this is the thing. What I do is there are a lot of beautiful companies out there making therapy oils that are they're used for specific purposes in mostly in addressing a lot of emotional and behavioral issues from time to time, but mostly medicinally. My purpose, my sole purpose, and I am a qualified aromatherapist. I was trained in Great Britain. But my purpose and what I do is to pour through history, through all of our ancestors, and find all of those stories that provide a picture of how scent is used to create, and this is the biggie, a quality of mind. So that's what I do. All of my blends, everything, their purpose is to basically, as you were saying when we came into the beginning of this, about all of our attitudes and what's going on now, how scent can work to help us adjust our attitudes and to bring our minds to a different place. You know, scent, like food, as you well know, it can take you on a journey. And that's basically what I'm about.
Exactly. I understand completely. You know, it's funny because I'm an Aquarius and I'm born in the year of the dragon. Although I'm not a cult follower, I am someone who believes in expansive explorations of information. I believe that there is more than we know. And that as modern 21st century people, I'll give you an example. The whole hoopla over the last 40 years about acupuncture and massage, there 40 years ago, there was so much resistance to the power of massage, of acupressure massage, of Rolfing. There was so much resistance to acupuncture, and yet acupuncture and these other arts or sciences have been studied and created cross-culturally for thousands of years, and yet there was all of this old white man resistance in America by the AMA about what these things were and what they actually do. And slowly but surely, decade by decade, these prejudices and these forlorn resistances to this stuff have fallen away, and more people understand that acupuncture specifically is extremely powerful and extremely effective in dealing with problems in the human body, and consequently problems in the human body physically. Then it also helps to process problems emotionally, because physical pain can cause you to be emotionally unbalanced and all of that. So if we're already seeing that acupuncture is becoming mainstream, right? I was listening to a person on a television show many years ago about aromatherapy, and aromatherapy was all new, and it was very, you know, Berkeley, California, and Age of Aquarius, and this is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, and everyone was like, oh, aromatherapy, you smell things and you're supposed to feel different. That's a bunch of bullshit. And what was intriguing was this scientist, a very, very conservative and not a guru at all, not some mystic or anything, said, why is aromatherapy so surprising? He said that the whole nature of smelling things is that your body is taking molecules in from the air, and they are going to special nerves through very thin membranes and very vulnerable membranes. Your sinuses are a very vulnerable place. That's why you can get a head cold very easily. You know, germs can invade there, and that's a ground zero for invasion from things outside, as well as good things. And his point was that molecules of substances go up into your nose and into those olfactory nerves. And they are actually in your body then. They enter and they are in your bloodstream, those molecules, those atoms and molecules go into your body. And he said, millions and millions of years of evolution, not just humans, but all mammals, and then not even mammals. You're going into birds, you're going into reptiles, you're going to all sorts of, you're going into sharks. They can smell things in the water. That all of these beings, these creatures, have evolved to be able to smell things that are bad and should be rejected immediately, that you should draw away from them, right? That this is one of the organism's ways of self-preservation. So an open bottle of ammonia, which is appalling, or formaldehyde, you smell that and immediately you pull away involuntarily because your body is designed to find that very dangerous. Consequently, things that are lovely, things that pheromones, first of all, pheromones in another, the opposite sex or the same sex, foods, you're attracted to them. You smell things often before you even want to taste them. So it's this whole thing is your sense of smell is not something spooky or weird or culty or phony. It's actually an amazingly powerful and important thing to have to promote your health and your well-being. Don't you agree?
Well, yes. I would also say to you that, I mean, got right down to the ground here. Your senses, your five physical senses, are how you build reality as a human. It creates. And the first sense, our sentientness, our consciousness itself, occurs in the womb when you taste and smell mother and father. So scent is an incredible pathfinder. And we have memories attached to scent. And this is the aromacologist's job, is to find out what memories are attached to what scent in order to work on behavioral issues, emotional issues, or even to achieve certain goals. That's the magical end of it. Scent is powerful, as well as vision and all your other senses, but scent comes first.
And I would just add to that. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of your taste too. And I will tell you that when I'm working with certain oils, if I'm not getting the results I want, I taste. I ingest and feel it that way too.
I can understand that completely. And I just would say to any skeptics, because we have to move on our subjects tonight, but any skeptics out there who don't agree, is there a person listening tonight who doesn't know the old cliche of smelling oranges and cloves or oranges and cinnamon and cloves and doesn't think of Christmas instantly? It's that old joke. Even Jewish people will say, oh, my God, I smelled oranges and cloves the other night, and I immediately thought of Christmas. It's like our memories, our feelings about things and specific events that happen are so triggered by even the most innocent smells. It could be dead summer. It could be July, 98 degrees. And if I smell oranges and cloves and cinnamon, it just that combination immediately, I'm near a Christmas tree somehow. That's just a sense memory for me. And I have so many of those. Many of my memories are linked to specific odors and smells and stuff. And so I find this whole aromatherapy and aroma, what did you say, aromacology? How did you pronounce it?
I'm an aromacologist, aromacologist.
Yes. I find that completely, completely fascinating and very compelling. And so I would dissuade people from being skeptics about it until the evidence you need most of all, is that cross-culturally, for tens of thousands of years, people all around the world have figured out how to somehow make some kind of perfume. If nothing else, people, as soon as they began cooking with fire and had a wheel, the next thing they did was, even if they weren't wearing clothes yet, they were wearing some sort of perfume. They ground up flowers, they did something, and they were doing more than just smelling nice, quote unquote, or polite or pretty. They were trying to affect their own psychology and each other's psychology and spirituality through smells. And so even if you're a skeptic about this stuff tonight, just remember Coco Chanel and her number five. You're talking about it. It's been everywhere. Perfumes and fragrances are there to make us think and feel certain ways. And they are very powerful in many, when you really think about different cultures, in some cultures like the Egyptians, for instance, frankincense, myrrh, ambergris, all of these early fragrances were extremely evocative and very powerful and very expensive. My God, when you think about the three wise men bringing gifts, baby Jesus, what did they bring? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's not like Caspar and Balthazar were bringing crap, and it was up to Melchior to bring the gold. It's like, what did you think this was? Nordstrom's, and then, JCPenney and Target? No, they were bringing things that were extremely valuable. They were presents, they were gifts worthy of royalty. And back then, to find frankincense, to bring myrrh, and to bring gold, those were three royal gifts, not unlike the way nutmeg, which is found was found in the 1600s only on one island in the South Pacific, that was worth the Dutch and the British renegotiating their trade of Manhattan from the Dutch to the British. The Dutch got the nutmeg islands itself. So you're talking about the way spices, smells, tastes, it's just extraordinary. Where do you think the word salary comes from? Salt. Because people were paid in salt in ancient times. Salt was so valuable. Ground pepper, it's the very nature. To be able to even make food taste good, let alone to preserve it with salt, with pepper, with spices. These things were all very evocative. And that's why what you're doing with fragrances is so wonderful and it's great. So I want to encourage everyone to run, do not walk, to daughtersofisis.com. That's all one word, Daughters of Isis. And go there and check out their products. And we're going to talk about another one next week. Okay. Gwen and I will pick out one that we'll talk about next week. And I think it's very fun. One of them has just a dollar sign on it. It's so modern. I think we should send a bottle of that to the Koch Koch brothers and Donald Trump.
Maybe we could
inspire them to give money away. Maybe the whole thing about the dollar sign one is not to make people prosperous. It's to make people spread their prosperity around. Maybe we could turn Donald Trump into Ebenezer Scrooge in the last moments of the book. That would be lovely, you know. we'll talk about that later. Will you pick out one of your oils this week that we can talk about next week?
Oh, certainly. And I'll keep the thought to something that will be helpful to the general society right now, because we do have a lot of issues to work on.
We sure do. All righty. Listen, I'm going to get we've spent the first third of the program talking about this, and it's fabulous, but I want to encourage other people to join the chat tonight. Remember, when you call in, you can chat about anything. You don't have to talk about Daughters of Isis. You can tell us a recipe. You can tell us some good news, something fun. Right now, our phone number is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. And operators are standing by. I want to mention a couple of things while I'm waiting for a call. Oh, first of all, if you haven't seen on my pages on Facebook, please tune in. I've got 31 days of Halloween. I've got anecdotes and memoirs and funny stories and recipes. Go to those pages, 31 days of Halloween. I love Halloween so much that I love to have 31 whole days of it. So I don't wait to the very end. I post things every day. Also, on Facebook, Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild. That's LOLLI-POP, P-O-P, Guild. That is our non-political page. My fan page and my main page have a political bend to them, but the Lollipop Guild is for everybody. So, and it's only about happy, diverting, and distracting, and escapism. So I know that many of you are exhausted by what's going on in the news and everything. A couple of weeks ago it was Brett Kavanaugh. Now it's the murder of Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate. Every day there's something new and appalling. Voter suppression in all sorts of states. There's one thing after another. If you're exhausted by it and you need a breather, run, do not walk, to Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild page. Join us. There's no entry fee. All we ask is that you share our wonderful things and even post things of your own on there. Everyone who joins can post lovely, lovely, funny things. Pictures of kitties and owls and the puppies, recipes, funny jokes, funny cartoons, but no politics and no bickering. That's all we ask. By the way, the Share the Love contest gets all sorts of attention. That is, if you are on Facebook and you are on any one of my pages, if you share something that Mummy posts with your friends, and immediately you just press the share button and then it goes all over, then your name is written on a raffle ticket. Imagine one of our wonderful volunteers or our interns will see your name, and then he or she will write it down on a raffle ticket and put it in our raffle drum here in the studio. At the end of the month, we turn that drum around and round and round, and then we pull out one lucky ticket, and that person gets to go to Zazzle.com, the Sybil Brunson page at Zazzle.com, and pick out a Sybil Brunson item that they would like to have, a T-shirt, a mug, a thermos bottle, all sorts of different things. You can customize them, and we will send them off to you. And our past winners have been Stephen Michael Roussos and Ann Lydia Gelbert, Peggy Roche, Mary Jane Nilsson, Miguel Moya. We've had all sorts of winners from all over the country. So they've been from the Bronx and from Connecticut and Kentucky and all of Arizona. So please enter today by sharing things. Remember, the more times you share our posts and our stories, the better your chances are they increase. I don't think we have a call yet, do we? No.
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to do one quick political thing. As you remember, I went off on a tangent about Brett Kavanaugh a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I'm going to very briefly recap, I'm going to say that even if his accuser had been a liar, and she was a complete liar, and he was an angel and innocent as could be, his temperament and his behavior was not judge-like. So I felt that he should not have been passed. I think it's incredibly cynical of the Republicans to have allowed him to become a justice. He not only was not fit to be a Supreme Court justice because of his behavior and his temper tantrum, he's not fit to be a judge anymore. That's the kind of behavior that you expect maybe from a defense attorney. You wouldn't even hire a waiter or a waitress who had a meltdown at a job interview like that. That was a job interview. Okay, and if a waiter and a waitress pulling into a restaurant parking lot had a fender bender with, let's say, a white waitress pulling in for an interview at a restaurant, had a fender bender with a black man in the parking lot, and they got into a whole altercation, and if she was furious and upset and he was insulting, and she came into the restaurant for an interview and she sat down and she was being interviewed for a job as a waitress minutes after an altercation in the parking lot, and she began screaming and yelling at the interviewer or the panel of interviewers, you know, the manager and an owner or a couple of owners, and one of them was black, and she went on a rampage about, this is a the black people, and rah, 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 is a nigger, rah, 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 rah. What chance would she have to be a bus person in that restaurant? What chance? And why would we hold her to a higher standard than we would a Supreme Court justice? A white, educated, wealthy man who came from privilege his whole life and has not known a day of desperation. Why would he be allowed to get away with that kind of behavior and become a Supreme Court justice? It has nothing to do with whether he's guilty or not. It has nothing to do with Blasey Ford's accusations. It has to do with the fact that he's not fit to sit in a restaurant as a cashier. His behavior is toxic and creepy. Okay? Now, I'm going to apply that to Khashoggi. Jamal Khashoggi walked into a consulate and apparently, there's soundtrack, was tortured. Elaborately tortured, by the way. I don't know if you've heard the rumors. They may have been cutting off his fingers along the way. It may have been very, very elaborate. And then finally he died. And we have met nothing but resistance from the Saudis and from our own government, specifically the president. And everyone has been stalling and stalling and stalling. And it's the same thing, the Justice Kavanaugh thing. Okay, it's the same thing. Well, he's not guilty and proven innocent, blah, blah, blah. And we've got a whole bunch of people in this country, barnyard people, who are gleeful about Donald Trump's stand on this. And the whole thing is that we're going to lose money because we're dealing with these people who have continued on and on and on to stretch the limits as allies of ours. This is like making a deal with Adolf Hitler. At what point do you finally say, wait a minute, we've enabled Hitler enough. There's the footage of people. Why not make peace with Hitler? There's all that 1930s footage that came out of New York protesters saying, well, can't we work out a deal with Hitler? At what point do you stop working out a deal? Because those people will take everything you keep giving them an inch, they'll take a mile. We gave him Austria, we gave him Czechoslovakia, we gave him Hungary, and then it was only when he invaded Poland and offended Stalin, his pal, right? This is like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump being pals. It's like Adolf Hitler and Stalin, who were pals until they weren't. And it was only because they had agreed on Poland, and then, of course, he went and got Poland. And that was where Stalin finally had to draw the line and say, What are you, crazy? Okay, so here we have Trump enabling the crown prince, enabling the king. Pompeo is over there. Pompous Pompeo is over there trying to be the Chamberlain of, the British equivalent, the American equivalent of Chamberlain, going over there and enabling an ally one more time, trying to, Neville Chamberlain, look it up, darlings. When mommy gives you a name, look it up on Google, Neville Chamberlain. Pompeo's over there trying to work out a deal. And I want to just bring this back to the parking lot, black person, waitress thing. From the start of this whole thing, the Saudis denied that anything happened. They acquired somebody who didn't look like Khashoggi, dressed him in his clothes, and then paraded him around town, making it look like he had left somehow. Okay? They've denied and denied and denied. And Donald Trump has enabled and enabled and enabled. And the terrible thing is that these people aren't particularly smart at lying. They're not geniuses and evil. They're stupid and evil. It's kind of like what Hannah Arendt said about 20th century evil. She said evil ultimately is banal. Or banal, depending on how you want to pronounce that. It's actually kind of stupid and not very clever or intelligent when you get down to it. Adolf Hitler was not a mental giant. None of his people around him were gifted scholars or philosophers. Their evil didn't come out of a brilliant place. And they rode along on Wagner's coattails. They tried to make Nietzsche and Wagner, who were geniuses, they tried to make them their champions. They kept pointing them and saying, "Well, this we're inspired by brilliant Nietzsche and brilliant Wagner, etc." But they themselves were C-minus students. Adolf Hitler was a sad, forlorn postcard painter and wallpaperer. He was nothing extraordinary. The 19th century of villainy that's in, like, Snidely Whiplash. Ha 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 ha! Give me your daughter. I'll foreclose on your mortgage. Those vaudevillian villains of the 19th century, Dickensian, all Charles Dickens villains, are kind of brilliant. Well, most of them are. They're kind of wonderfully evil. They're ingeniously evil for the most part. The buffoons, if they do bad things, are really buffoons and they get caught. But in his books, in Nicholas Nickleby, the uncle who's ingeniously evil, he is caught at the end, but he's ingenious. He's not banal. Today, and since Hitler's time, a lot of our villains are very banal people. They're actually very ordinary. They just are rotten. They're morally corrupt. And they're kind of stupid, okay? The royal family of Saudi Arabia came up with all these lies, and they got caught and caught and caught. Well, that's not – Khashoggi never really did leave, and now the Turks have the recordings, and apparently he was tortured elaborately, and there's a recording of this, and then he was killed, and then he was cut to pieces, and they disposed of him, okay? Now, I would like to just say this. Anyone who's Googled – Muslim behavior around a funeral and the deceased, the respect that Muslims accord their deceased and the body of a person who's passed, they are very, very elaborate in how they treat the dead. This is why there was so much about Osama bin Laden's death. When Osama bin Laden was taken out and he was finally, assassinated, and his family, the people that were with him and his bodyguards, there was all this Muslim pushback on, well, we should have his body and we should take care of his body and we should respect his body. There were other people that said his body should be thrown in an alley when set on fire. His body should be taken out to sea and dumped, you know, unceremoniously in the Gulf of Persia. Just throw it away. Okay. And there were all these people in the United States, non-Muslims, who said, well, that's disrespectful to his family or to his loved ones. We should return the body. We should respect the body. His body should not be mutilated or defiled the way, of course, Mussolini was treated after he was, you know, and this is what Hitler certainly didn't want, you know, to have his body, you know, stripped naked and paraded through the streets of Berlin. Look at Mussolini and his mistress, completely. The Ceausescus in Romania, completely defiled. Completely disrespected. So what's fascinating to me is that the Saudi Arabians, the royal family, and the 18 people that accidentally killed Jamal Khashoggi, right? A fist fight? If it was an accident, why would you cover it up and chop his body to pieces and dispose of his body where they can't be found? The lies have become so stupid. It's so enormously stupid. And by the way, what is the royal family going to come up with now? Okay, it was an accidental fist fight. He died accidentally. And what, Coptic Christians had taken over the consulate and defiled his body and cut it to pieces? What? Maybe it was Jews. Maybe it was a bunch of Israeli Jews went in there and assassinated Khashoggi. Somehow they got permission to be in the Saudi Arabian consulate, and a death squad of deranged radical Jews were in there. They tortured and killed Khashoggi, and then they cut him into pieces and what? Ate him? I can't imagine what more lies they can come up with. Why would it be so, if it was an accident, why would Muslims dismember a body and dispose of it and hide it? How much more disrespectful could be to him and to his body and his family? I just want you to vote accordingly, because voting day is 15 days away. I want you to think about what the right wing is saying and what Republicans are espousing. I want you to think about all of them. I want you to think about Trump's gal pal, Ted Cruz, you know, on again, off again, like two seventh grade girls bickering. One month they're liars and haters. The next month they're pals and on the cheerleading squad together. I want you to think about McConnell and Ryan. I want you to think about Senator Cornyn or Cornhole, whatever his name is. You know, Senator Astley or Grassley, whatever it is. I want you to think about that dithering, jiggling old broad collaborator from Maine, right? I want you to think about them, and I want you to vote accordingly. And if you need evidence and Brett Kavanaugh's old news, I want you to think about Khashoggi. Because I'll tell you something right now. If Donald Trump could talk some foreign consulate into getting rid of Rachel Maddow, he would. If he could get away with it, he's shown exactly what he thinks about journalism, about news, about a free press. He's shown exactly who he is. He is, in fact, the royal family of Saudi Arabia's whore. He's in it for a dollar. And when you're a prostitute, you do what your employer and your pimp say for a dollar. They want you to do naked jumping jacks. You do naked jumping jacks. Because when everything comes down to the almighty dollar, that's where you're at. And so you've heard it from Sybil Brunchen. Donald Trump is the Saudi Arabian royal family's whore, because he's willing to do anything for a dollar, the almighty dollar. Do I want to see business leave this country? No, I don't. But I also know that I'm not going to eat a pan of cow shit to fund things. I'm not going to do it. And so that's where we stand. With voting day coming closer and closer, he is showing you clearer and clearer what you should do. And by the way, if you're one of these people that they keep interviewing on, you know, Megyn Kelly or whatever, talk about that another time, the Roger Ailes go-to girl. Just when you see people say, oh, I don't know if I can vote because I don't know the issues. Well, I don't know that it really makes a difference. And you see them, I want you to banish them, unfriend them. Wash your hands of them, because anyone who doesn't vote or is too stupid to vote or too lazy to vote, they are collaborators. Okay, enough about that. We're at 8:39. All right.
We have a caller.
I'm seeing all sorts of notes coming in from people. We still don't have a call, though.
Yes. We have a caller.
Oh, we do. I didn't see that. Okay, I'll take it.
Okay. caller is from area code 973. 973, you're on.
Hello. Hi. Hi, everybody. It's Elaine. How you doing, Sybil?
Who is this?
Elaine Zenoff.
Elaine, how are you? I'm sorry, I didn't say, we still don't have the ability to do that. Elaine, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. I'm all right. You know, it was so nice to hear about, you know, metaphysical change of mind. I mean, that really is what is necessary. And you know, talking about incense and whatnot, I mean, how could people, as irrefutable proof, an animal goes over to another animal and sniffs him in the butt.
Yes.
To
yeah.
Knuckle feet.
I mean, an animal. Yes, exactly. That's so true. I hadn't even thought of that. But that is so true. When animals approach each other, the first thing they do is they begin to smell the chemistry that is the intimate chemistry of each other. And that's also what's so fascinating with dogs. They now have dogs that can smell cancer on people.
That's it. That was my next
is
point.
Is that intriguing?
When you talk about, well, you know, this is esoteric stuff and some hippy-dippies and all that. No. These dogs can smell cancer, and you know that. And so many people know this. You know, we have unlearned through the centuries what people have always known about herbs and stuff. That's all they had, you know?
And I agree.
To reassess that. To reestablish it again, and to have people try to rebuke it as being, you know, kumbaya stuff. It's I feel sorry for them.
Yes, I agree. I was going to just say that we have unlearned. You know, I took Latin for years. I took classical languages for years in school. And one of the things that I found so intriguing was that the Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians believed in bathing. They believed that it was very important. They believed not only in bathing for vanity purposes, they believed that it kept them from getting sick. They didn't know that germs existed or that bacteria and viruses existed. They just
purification.
Yes, and the fact that by being cleaner rather than dirty, that their skin was better, which meant that their health was better, and they generally were just cleaner. And it's interesting because when Christianity came, and one of the offshoots of Christianity was a rejection of pagan ideas and aesthetics.
Yeah.
The whole Dark Ages became a time when people did not bathe. They felt that was Roman and Greek decadence.
They threw the baby out with the bathwater, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we unlearned. What we had was we had 1,000 years of people dying of plague and all sorts of things because we didn't believe in bathing. People didn't begin to bathe again until the Victorians. So that was like the 1800s. People began, even Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI were surrounded by people who were dousing themselves in perfumes, which were, of course, very expensive.
That was always cold as I was growing. Yeah, that was euphemistically what my mother would say. Oh, don't take a French bath on me now, please. Don't take a French bath, which means don't throw that perfume around.
Yeah, and that was the only way they could keep fleas and lice at bay was to try and maybe scare them off with perfumes and fragrances. But in fact, the people back then had everything. They had scabies, lice, any kind of insect or arachnid you can think. They must have been miserable and they must have been physically appalling under their strange makeup and their things. I mean, no wonder they all had smallpox and were lucky to survive. No wonder they had, you know, typhus and typhoid fever. And
that's why they drank so much. That's why they drank so much, because they knew, you know, they rather did be happy and drunk than deal with the pain, you know.
That's so true. All right, I've got to take another call, but I want to ask you a quick question. What's your favorite perfume?
That's interesting. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who makes
beautiful?
It?
I don't know who makes it. You can I'm not a label girl. I just know I go buy something and say, ooh, isn't that pretty? And there's another one I'm using. It's a cream, a body cream that I think creams stay with you so much better, don't they? It's called Amazing Grace.
Look those up. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there did you ever wear French vanilla? Vanilla extract?
Please.
Did you ever wear vanilla extract?
Yeah,
that's so funny. My grandmother.
Yeah.
my grandmother would do things like when she would cut an orange, she would take the orange peel and squeeze it behind her ears and say, "There, Grandma's wearing perfume." And it was funny because she would do that, and she would also put vanilla extract behind her ears with orange. And
oh,
it was like so interesting.
Her.
She was being half funny and half serious.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Funny.
Absolutely. I mean, in our house, there was always lemons and oranges cooking on the stove. So my mother wanted to perfume the kitchen and maybe throw in a cinnamon stick, you know. And that was it. You don't have to worry about everything being, you know, finding out later that it was all bad and you're going to get lung cancer, you know. It's always natural stuff. I mean, my mother was the earth mother for so many people. I can't tell you. My father owned a 16-family apartment building. And, you know, we had another house on an island down the shore and whatnot. But my mother just loved being around tons and tons of people. And all these brides would come in, you know, for the first time and had the baby and didn't know. And everybody said, "Oh, just go see Marie. Go see Marie." So this baby had constipation. And I'm going to move on because I didn't have other calls. But she had constipation. And so my mother went to the refrigerator and pulled out some parsley. And took off the diaper and went ding, 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 ding. No more constipation.
How funny. Well, of course, my favorite fragrance of Italians. I think one of the things that attracts me to Italians so much is the ultimate fragrance, garlic. I'm telling you, I live. Is there a smell that is more divine and more mysterious than a hot frying pan, a pat of butter, a splash of olive oil, and garlic hitting the heat?
Oh my God.
Then you add onions and tomatoes and celery. You're talking about that is truly God's smell on earth.
It's a symphony for your nose.
I've actually let that cool, right? All of that, the garlic, the onions, everything cool.
Yes.
And then I have taken a finger, put my finger in it, and put a little smear behind my ears and gone out on a date. And I'm telling you, I have never had trouble picking up an Italian man. I have walked up and down the street, Mott Street, with that behind my ears.
Oh,
and I'm telling you, they are walking behind me with their pants tensing out in front of them.
I would sit in my bed as a little girl, and my mother would have all the scents going, and all of a sudden I'd hear, psh! I mean, she threw in the tomatoes, you know? Psh! I said, and you'd be drooling in your bed. You just knew the goodness was coming in about 2 hours, because that's how long she wants to cook her sauce, you know, her sauce. Anyway.
Speaking of smells, when you think about the earliest first ape who saw an animal with his friends, outside the cave, struck by lightning, and smelled that animal dead and now beginning to roast. And they all looked at each other and said, "Oh, that's good. That is really good.
If we only had some garlic, it would be better."
Yeah, really. Well, those were the Italian Neanderthals. They're the ones that came up with the whole idea of the lightning hit the garlic and the onion underground. And then the antelope was killed, and they said, "Oh, no, this is really magnificent. This is great. This is not only a food opportunity, this is a fine fragrance opportunity. Ladies, line up. We're going to bottle this and make this a perfume for you. And kids, get ready for dinner." Anyway, Elaine, I'm so glad you called.
Oh, same here. I love you, and I love what you're speaking about tonight. I mean, just
we'll
terrific.
Talk. Okay, we'll talk this week for sure.
You're too
but
busy.
I'm back, and we will talk.
All right, Dolly. Bye-bye, everybody. God bless. Bye.
God bless you, Elaine. Good night.
Good night.
Elaine Zenna. I love her. I didn't get to talk about the Sears bankruptcy, and that was something that came up a lot in the small towns I was in this week. People are talking about the Sears bankruptcy and the fact that we are covered now in this country with malls, vast 40-acre-sized malls that are half-empty or totally empty, that are either boarded up or are completely broken open and half burned to the ground. They've become shooting galleries and gang galleries and Oxycontin galleries. And this was the great American dream of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And these malls and the mega companies that were housed in them wiped out small town America. They wiped out the Larimer Squares and the cute little old market areas and all the Beale Streets of Memphis. They wiped out all the mom and pop entrepreneurial companies and businesses, and said that they would replace them with more efficiency, better prices, better merchandise, and then they failed. And they this corporate capitalism wiped out real capitalism. You know, mummy's all in favor of capitalism, but it's mom and pop capitalism. And what we've been saddled with now for 30 years is a sad, forlorn, corrupt version of that. A Koch brother, Trump, right-wing, neo-fascist nightmare. And we're saddled with all that real estate now, with tumbleweeds growing through it and gangs traveling through them. And what's ironic is that so many of these malls have turned into SRO homes, homeless shelters. They've turned into housing for people who are mentally challenged, psychologically challenged. It's ironic that we've wiped out small towns and replaced it with this corporate nightmare. That was a subject that I was going to go into a lot because we had a lot of people. I had met tons of people talking about that in red states, by the way. That's red state conversations. I want to just acknowledge a couple of things before we go on because we're not going to be able to take another phone call, I don't think. By the way, when you call in, folks, please call in early in the show because I will change the subject completely. I will make it totally about you, okay? So let's call in early at the beginning of the show and let's do that. Oh, somebody did send me a private question. Sybil, can you tell us about white vinegar and berries? Yes, one of my home cures. Have you bought fruit recently, especially berries, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries at the farm stand or in the grocery store? Take them home. Do not wash them in water. Do not rinse them in water. First of all, you should eat them pretty soon. But if you're not going to eat them, if you're going to put them in the refrigerator, put them in the refrigerator in the package they're in. Do not rinse them in water. If you want to rinse them in anything, get a bowl, pour white vinegar in it, one part white vinegar, three parts water. It's a diluted white vinegar solution. Submerge the berries in their basket. Listen carefully. In the basket and the berries and the plastic, all of it, all of the thing. Submerge it and make sure that that white vinegar solution goes on everything. Leave it there for a couple of minutes, then take it out. Do not rinse it off. Just put it on a towel and let it all run out. And then put it back in the refrigerator. The white vinegar will not affect the taste, and it will kill all the spores, anything that is living in there that should not be living in there. You will double the life of your berries if you do that. Remember, do not rinse them in water and then put them in the refrigerator. The water will only encourage mold to grow even faster, even in a refrigerator, okay? And one other thing, Jeffrey Piccolomini, my wonderful Italian friend, says that I'm supposed to remind all of you, tomatoes never go in the refrigerator. Do not put tomatoes in a cold place. Tomatoes, the flavonoids, whatever, in tomatoes are vulnerable to temperatures below 50 degrees. That's why you've got to pick tomatoes when they're – you can't grow tomatoes on Fire Island and let the temperature drop, okay? Grow your tomatoes. Get them in. Late-season tomatoes are very vulnerable, and there's nothing more dead or forlorn than a tomato that has been refrigerated. We have a wonderful grocer out on Fire Island who keeps putting his tomatoes in with all the fresh produce in the refrigerator section. And the tomatoes, he buys beautiful tomatoes, but he ruins them by refrigerating them. Do never, ever, ever refrigerate tomatoes. Tomatoes are among the most vulnerable vegetables. When you buy them, use them. And by the way, I know one of you out there, some snarker is going to say, oh, really? Well, why can you put tomato sauce in the refrigerator? Why can you freeze tomato sauce? Because it's been cooked. You can always freeze tomatoes, like tubes of tomato paste. You can always refrigerate them because they have been cooked. But a raw tomato can never, ever, ever be refrigerated. It must be cooked to anchor that flavoring. Okay, so there, Jeffrey, there's your thing. I want to just say, okay, I'm looking at the clock. Remember, folks, Tell your friends, share the news. We're on Monday nights here on Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the Here Be Monsters network on Blog Talk Radio. Here Be Monsters is a collection of beautiful programming, and Gwendolyn Holdenberry is our chief sponsor. She's our Catherine Graham, if you will. She's the K Graham of the Here Be Monsters network. She's my boss, and she generously offered this slot to me on Monday nights at 8. We're on at 8 o'clock every Monday, Eastern Standard Time. We're about to go to Standard or whatever, and that you check your local time because we're broadcasting live. And if you ever miss a program, you can go to the Here Be Monsters network on Blog Talk Radio, click on there, and you will see all of Mummy's past shows, as well as the other shows that Gwendolyn offers, will all be linked up there, and you can always play reruns at your own leisure. Okay, remember, we've got the Share the Love contest going on, and we'll be drawing that in a few days. Halloween is coming up. We'll do a special show next Monday about Halloween. Election Day is November 6th. You've got 15 days before Election Day. I'm telling you right now, get your absentee ballot. Go and vote ahead of time. If you've got a local voting office, do that. If you're not going to be in town to vote, try and vote it early. Be meticulous. And by the way, ignore all the polls, all the forecasts. Do not be dissuaded or discouraged. If you're finding out that your state is voting for Ted Cruz and not for Beto, forget that. Ignore that. There is no lost cause. Vote. Vote as if your life depended on it, because it does depend on it. Okay? Gwendolyn, do you have anything you'd like to add to any of this tonight?
Well, with everything that's going on, and it's certainly telltale, and when you go out, that people are scared and people are not getting along sometimes. Just remember kindness. Kindness is something that gives back, because when you do something kind for somebody else, you feel like $1 million. You really do.
Yes, I think that that's very true. I think we have to balance kindness, though, with wisdom. I was listening to Megyn Kelly today hectoring people about the fact that Mitch McConnell was accosted in a restaurant by elderly people who were yelling at him about the fact that he's been promoting programs and bills to take away people's Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security to pay the deficit which has been created by the tax breaks to the 1%. And she was saying that's so uncivil and it's so impolite. I agree with kindness, but I also think that kindness is a knife that cuts both ways. And when you're a millionaire, 1% old white man, straight, in Congress, and you're going to be taken care of for life medically because you were a senator or a congressman and you already qualify for all this, you've got perks coming out of your ass, I think that you're going to have to be kind yourself. Because you can't expect people who are struggling and finding out that their Social Security will be diminished so that we can fund millionaires and billionaires' homes in the Grand Caymans. That is not polite. That is not civilian. And that whore, that Fox whore, Megyn Kelly, should sort of look in the mirror for a second, because she is the queen of incivility when it comes to that. She can preach that all that she likes, but let's just remember that Barack Obama tried to act like a gentleman and a civil intellectual person for 8 years and was screwed at every turn by Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and their gang. So that whole civility thing is a knife that cuts both ways. And I think that what they're going to find is that people are in diners in Kentucky are going to start running out of civility. You know, they ran out of civility in France in 1789. The poor stopped being polite. The poor stopped being polite in Moscow in 1917. And that's what the 1% doesn't like. They don't like to find out that the rabble is impolite. Anyway, we've got to wrap up our show. I will see you next Monday. I love you all. Gwendolyn, thank you so much. Be kind, but be smart, okay? That's Mummy's advice. Be kind, but be smart. Love you all. Good night.